to the Asylum. And now, your hosts, Rick Flieger and Rick Riggs.
Live at AsylumFantasySports.com, that is. The RFSN, the Real Fan Sports Network. It's the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show.
We are Flieger and Briggs. Welcome into the Asylum. And Rick, still exhausted from this last weekend. I'll tell you what.
It was a blast, but it took a lot out of me. Those guys earned their money, I got to say. The media.
It was quite interesting. Very fun.
Absolutely. Access I've never had before, Rick. I'm sure we'll get more and more of this as time goes on. But if you don't know what we're talking about, spent the week, if you weren't following us on Twitter, at Asylum Football, shame on you. Rick and I spent the weekend in Canton, a full behind-the-scenes Access media credentials to the Hall of Fame game, the Hall of Fame ceremonies, everything surrounding it, Rick, and it was an amazing time.
It was, and I still think the best part wasn't the game or whatever. It was the number one, the media day on Friday was just, to me, it was really surprising because now obviously these guys are being inducted to the Hall of Fame. So you really can't be in a bad mood.
Yeah. You wouldn't think you'd be too surly then,
but just, I mean, very thoughtful, just courteous. I mean, they took all the time in the world and had no problem answering questions, and I was not guilty of it, but, you know, there was still the ones there, you know, how's it feel to be in the hall? Well, you know, it sucks. I mean, come on.
It's aight.
Yeah, right. But you know what I'm saying. But it was great. And the game itself, like I said, wasn't that big of a thrill to me, but, you know, on the field before the game, on the field after the game, that was fun.
Yeah, exactly. And to get a view just from the inside. And look, it was the Hall of Fame game, probably the least relevant preseason game in a rack of irrelevant preseason games. But I think there was some takeaways on it. Now, we're not going to get into that on this show. I'll let you know we are putting together a special with all the interviews. Check out AsylumFantasySports.com. We have a lot of the information from Media Day. We're putting together a show, just a special show we'll put out there for you of all the goings on there. And this week only, we will be discussing the Hall of Fame game with some post-game reaction from the players on our show on the Fantasy Sports Network, Sundays on FantasyStatsNetwork.com, cable vision channel 147 in the New York area, and MTS cable in Canada. Check that out. I will put that together one time only and put that up on our website so you can hear the behind the scenes of the Hall of Fame game as well. I'll get that up on our website. Probably won't be till Sunday after we air the first time on Fantasy Sports Network to keep everything
above
board.
And we do have a show that we cut in the hall on Radio Row with a lot of the audio from the Media Day interviews. A lot of good information from guys I know you weren't familiar with, Claude Humphrey, Ray Guy, so forth. You know, the Derrick Brooks and Walter Jones. You know, you don't have to be real old to remember these guys.
Yeah, those guys I remember. Claude Humphreys was an impressive man, just a mountain of a man. He's got to be what, Rick, in his 60s probably?
Yeah, probably. Let's see, he was a rookie in 68, so you figure that'd make him born in about 46. Yeah. So, yeah, you're pushing 70.
Yeah.
I mean, about 68.
Still an impressive
huge
man.
Huge man, you know, yes, indeed.
First punter ever to get in, Ray Guy. I know a guy made a big impression on you.
Yeah, I'd sit there and talk to him forever. It was, and he seemed to enjoy talking with everybody. He was quite moved, I believe, that he was the first punter to make the Hall of Fame. And even in his speech, you know, now they have a complete team and so forth. And this guy deserves it. I remember him well. Look, they come up with the hang time clock for this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And
change the game.
Yeah.
Change special teams.
That's
anyhow
what the Hall is, game changers, playmakers. I mean, this guy, you know, I don't know if it was you or another acquaintance of mine. Well, you know, you only average about 42, 43 yards a punt. Yeah, but they were standing there waiting on it.
Right, yeah.
That's all they got.
So there's no return. So the net and the gross averaged out to be about the same. So follow AsylumFantasySports.com all throughout the week and through the weekend. We'll get all that up there. You're going to want to check it out. And thank you again, and we'll get into fantasy football here real shortly. Thank you again. I think, Rick, we got to say thank you to the Hall of Fame in general. They put on an amazing program. They treat everyone amazingly, very helpful, very kind to us to give us this opportunity. I never felt unwelcome anyway. Well, maybe a little bit in the very beginning. I had a little hissy fit, but that'll be for another behind-the-scenes episode.
Yeah, that was
but after I got calmed down a little bit, very accommodating, made the players accessible, made the facilities accessible. A great weekend, and I think it speaks well for all the negativity surrounding the NFL right now. I know this isn't an NFL property. It's just an amazing job.
And I will be the first to admit I've got an article in the works right now. And if there's any reason why you think NFL players sometimes seem like they don't have patience,
right,
and so forth, go to one of these games. It is the most appalling thing. It is not, hey, would you sign this?
Right.
Hey, could I get a picture with you? It is demanding.
Oh, yeah.
Give me your towel.
Right.
I want your gloves. You don't need them anymore. It was the most appalling, gruesome spectacle I have ever seen.
Yeah, I've never seen it from that perspective before, and it was stunning, the demands. That's the perfect word, the demands put on these guys. Well, Rick, that more to come on that, AsylumFantasySports.com. Check it out this weekend. I'll have all that put together and up at the website. But, Rick, it looks like our guest is on the line, and it's time to talk a little NFC or AFC North, excuse me, and some fantasy football.
Yes, indeed. And we have coming in to discuss the AFC North and the AFC West today to round out the AFC fantasy-wise. You hear him on ESPN 1530 and Fox Sports 1360 in Cincinnati and Sirius XM Radio. Radio host Dan Claskins. Dan, welcome.
Fellas, how are we doing? Merry football season to you.
It is. It's fully engulfed. Just got back from a rough weekend in Canton and spent the whole weekend out there. And I might be footballed out already. I can't lie to you.
Well, first of all, I'm very jealous. Sadly, even living here in Cincinnati, I've been to Canton plenty covering high school football. I've actually never made it up there for the Hall of Fame game. But looks like you guys had a good time.
Yeah, it did. It was an exciting time and learned a lot of things. And it was kind of nice, you know, being an older guy. And I remember Ray Guy from high school. It was cool being one-on-one with him. That was one of my favorites.
I'll tell you, it was pretty cool for me seeing Andre Reed getting there. I can remember back when I first started playing fantasy football. This is actually 25 years ago now, 1990. This is my 25th season, I should say, but Andre Reed, Jim Kelly, that was the original, back then we called it the 10-point play, and those guys, both now Hall of Famers, I love those Buffalo Bills back in that time. Of course, they did steal the no-huddle offense from Sam Leitch and Cincinnati Bengals, but that's a whole other story. We'll get into that in another podcast, fellas.
Yeah, that's what run under the bridge, certainly. So let's start it out. I know, I believe you're doing a draft as we speak. Where are you picking and what direction are you going?
You know, it's I misinformed you on that, Rick. I apologize because it was 7 o'clock start time, but I did not realize that was Central. So that will start up at the top of the hour for me. So I'm giving you guys my full attention. But, yeah, it's thehuddle.com. They're 10-team PPR experts draft, and there's a lot of good guys from the industry. It's a long-time draft. We're happy to be part of it for the first time. But I got the 7th pick there in a PPR, one quarterback league. And, you know, that's not a bad spot to be in. I'm not a big fan of 10-team leagues, though, honestly, unless they do incorporate two quarterbacks or that super flex. I just think it just changes the whole dynamic of a draft when you've only got 10 teams and one starting quarterback per team. What's your guys' take on these two quarterback setup?
Well, we're in what is that? It's called the Fish Invitational or whatever. There's like 260 players. I don't know if you're involved. There's so many people in there. It's hard to keep track of them all, but they're broken into conferences and divisions and so forth, and it has a two-quarterback system in it. It is – I know the first time that I drafted two quarterbacks, I was caught in the wings of not having a quarterback. It just didn't dawn on me because I usually get a quarterback later, and there wasn't anybody.
It changes everything, I think. you know, that's cool. One of the things I will say about the whole two quarterback philosophy, and same thing, you know. I mean, I take questions all the time. I'm sure you guys hear it from people I want to know too. You know, 18 leagues, 10 team leagues, whatever the league. Hey, man, whatever you enjoy playing, and that's great. It's all about having some fun. Everybody has their own preferences. But I will say this, in leagues where 10 or less teams with the quarterback, and it's the dawn of the passing league we're sitting in right now, I mean, I just think you totally devalue Peyton Manning and Drew Brees, and who I've got number one in my 2014 ranking at the position, Aaron Rodgers. Completely devalue that because, I mean, there's only 10 starting quarterbacks in this league. I mean, you can go down to any cheat sheet online and look at number 10, 11 at quarterback, and, you know, you're feeling pretty good about having that guy on your fantasy squad.
Yeah, I'd be just as comfortable down at number 10, especially in a 10-team format. I wouldn't be looking quarterback early. So let's start it out talking quarterbacks. Let's start it out with you brought up your Cincinnati Bengals, I believe four times already, if I marked it down right. Andy Dalton.
Has it been that much, man?
Well, I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but 6 years, $115 million for Andy Dalton. Let's look at him as an NFL quarterback, and then maybe we'll parlay that into some fantasy talk. What do you make of is Andy a long-term solution for your Cincinnati Bengals?
You know, there's a lot of mixed emotions over this deal here in town. I can certainly speak to that, but I think as the dust settles on this deal and more people realize what we're really talking about with Andy Dalton is, and that contract, that contract becomes those numbers if he wins the Super Bowl and an NFL MVP. And at that point, you know, we won't care. They guaranteed two more years. He was already under contract this year. I mean, what I always say to people is, what's the plan B? You know, every Bengal fan I talk to is down. It's like, okay, if you want to get rid of him, who's next? And, he's the one of only three quarterbacks in NFL history that's led his team to the NFL playoffs in his first three seasons of his career. I think that I'm a big fan. I'm real anxious to see what happens with offense coordinator Hugh Jackson taking over there for Jay Gruden, who, of course, left to take the job as the head coach in Washington, D.C. But Hugh Jackson, an offense coordinator, I think he's going to fit Marvin Lewis's overall style of football better. And, fellas, I don't care what line of man. You know, yeah, I'm a fantasy guy. I also run a marketing company. And I've managed a lot of people, and I'll tell you right now, I mean, when it comes to managing your personnel, whether it's a football team or a marketing team, it's all about, getting the best out of your personnel, putting them in a chance to succeed. And when Andy Dalton's throwing the rock 37 times a game, which is what he averaged under his time with Mr. Gruden, I believe that, you're not putting Andy Dalton in a chance to succeed. I believe the Bengals offense is going to pound the rock. I believe Gio Bernard, who, in my opinion, is as good as any running back on any league when it comes to making a play, whether it's between the tackle door and the outside. I look for him to become the focal point of this offense. They're going to pound with Jeremy Hill. And, you still got A.J. Green. So Dalton, in this contract, you're really talking about $25 million guaranteed for two more years. And then the Bengals can walk away, which means you could draft a replacement in next year's draft and have him just sit 1 year. So I think it's a much better deal than Colin Kaepernick just got. I think it's a better deal and setup than Joe Flacco got. The Bengals' option to wait a year. Maybe they get on a roll, get to the Super Bowl, which with the other parts of this team that could, and then suddenly you got to pay him that type of money. And just like we saw in Baltimore, that what that means, they just started losing pieces. Now they got this done. They can move on to the next step, which is locking up A.J. Green. I anticipate that to happen maybe even before the season, if not definitely, that's the next thing on the plate. So I'm a fan of the move. I'm a fan of Andy Dalton. Is he a top 10 quarterback in the league? Is this guy a Hall of Famer? Nah, certainly not. But I think he's good enough to not lose the Bengals games. And, at this point, like I said, until you have a plan B, why let go of something that's working?
Yeah, and he's gaining experience as he goes. And I think you hit on a great point. You know, what is plan B? I mean, what, Jason Campbell, A.J. McCarron? Yeah, I like Andy Dalton myself, and I kind of equate a lot of him to Tony Romo. I mean, they throw knocks on him all the time, but you find me a better option, and I'm all for it. But there's not out there. Look, we know how long it took in Pittsburgh to go from Terry Bradshaw to Ben Roethlisberger, and how many mediocre and inadequate quarterbacks.
Oh.
For a long period.
Just ask the Browns fans. They know didn't know real well how long to get from what, Brian Seif, Bernie Kosar. I mean,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
In your long days of Bernie Kosar, you've had some trouble. So you brought up
AJ McCarron is married to Catherine Webb now, so there is the, you know, I do like having him as our third string quarterback. It makes for a little bit more interesting game days and training camps and such.
Yeah, certainly makes the press box probably a lot better looking there. So you brought up Gio Bernard. I don't think there's a lot of argument as far as him as being a number one fantasy running back. How do you see the split of carries? We hear a lot about Jeremy Hill. We got Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. You wonder what their roles are going to be. Any insight on that being near the team?
Yeah, I definitely get from especially talking to my friends that cover the team on a daily basis that, you know, Gio Bernard is a guy that's certainly not assured of a roster spot here. I mean, at this point, I'm not saying there's a big trade market for Bernard, or excuse me, law firm. But at the end of the day, I mean, one could develop. He could be a roster cut. I don't think that he's going to have a big role in 2014 regardless. Jeremy Hill, I mean, they drafted him to fit an exact thing that they were looking for. If they were looking for, you know, an every down running back, you probably would have went with Carlos Hyde, but they tagged the guy they liked, took him ahead of Hyde, which I personally wasn't in agreement with at the time. But yeah, Hill's going to get an opportunity to be the short yardage back here. I mean, he's a guy that I think will be getting his 10-plus touches a game. Like I said, Jeff Hobson, Bengals.com, he's preaching 300-plus touches for Gio Bernard. If that's the case, you know, you got Hill pounding the rock. I think the other interesting part is how they're going to use the tight ends under Hugh Jackson. A lot more two tight end formations. Gruden, you know, didn't even really utilize last year's first-round pick in Tyler Eifert. I expect him to have a presence. And Jermaine Gresham in a contract here, certainly with a lot to prove at that position. So I think the running game is going to be absent of the law firm. I think Hill's going to have enough punch in there. A guy that could score 8 to 10 touchdowns his rookie season if this offense is as good as it could be. But at the end of the day, It's Geo time in Cincinnati when it comes to the ground game. And as a Bengal fan and as a fantasy owner of Bernard in a couple spots in Dynasty League, that's a pretty exciting possibility in my eyes.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you mentioned the Gresham and Eifert. You know, certainly to me that those are two guys that I would like to have on the field in those two tight end sets, to be honest with you. Because, you know, Gresham – always been to me someone I've always expected more out of, and I don't really know if it's they don't see the potential in the offensive plan or they just have not utilized him to his full potential. But I think both these guys could be used, you know, quite handsomely in this offense.
There's no doubt about it, Rick. I think that you're talking about Gresham. I mean, he's shown some flashes. But, I mean, the constant theme here really is when we talk about these guys that we're still sort of scratching our heads on is, I mean, it goes back to Jake Gruden and how he, you know, ran this offense and how different it's going to be under Hugh Jackson. I mean, sure, AJ Green's still going to be the best weapon in the entire offense. But, in general, just a more up-tempo attack, definitely going to be running at a higher volume. And I think you're going to see, especially with the tight ends, a lot more usage of that position in the red zone. I mean, Jackson's historically kept that to the ground game near the goal line, and that's what Hill has brought in here for. He's a pounder. But people just assume because he's a great playmaker and he's shifty and quick that Gio Bernard can't run between the tackles. But, I mean, he was impressive in college at doing that, and he even further impressed me during his rookie campaign, actually with three of his touchdowns coming from inside the three-yard line. He only had, I believe, 7 carries inside the 5. So that's a pretty good success rate there down the second half of the season.
Yeah, so you talk about you expect the Bengals to pound the rock and to be a run-first team. The question year in and year out, obviously A.J. Green, top 5 fantasy wide receiver year in and year out, and I don't expect that to change. Does anyone emerge, the wide receiver 2 there in Cincinnati, to become fantasy relevant, or is it another year of A.J. Green and that's where it ends?
Well, I mean, I would argue that Marvin Jones was pretty fantasy relevant last year. I mean, granted, he had the big 3-touchdown game, which padded the stats a little bit, but he's a guy that could project out. I mean, to, you know, have 8 touchdowns be relevant. Sanu didn't really live up to his hype. He sort of had that buzz around him last year, but I can tell you firsthand from watching him down in camp and Also, once again, just talking to people that are out there every day, he's impressed. But I think Marvin Jones is still a guy on my radar. You look at his ADP, it's somewhere between 110, 130 overall. Makes him a wide receiver, 4 or 5. I mean, he's not going to offer the consistency to count on, but certainly a nice guy to pad the bench. But I don't really expect a lot from this year's rookie class. They did draft a receiver in the 7th round in James Wright. He's pressing to make the team. And then, you look at the Whalen kids also in the mix. But Marvin Jones is really the only guy. It's new if you're in a league with 18 man rosters or deeper, could be worth the stab. But, yeah, I mean, really boils down to getting the best out of A.J. Green, because he's the guy that could be worth a first-round pick in most formats.
Yeah, there's certainly no question that Cincinnati has an abundance of fantasy-relevant players. Let's stay in your state with a team that doesn't have quite as many fantasy-relevant players. I don't see what's so funny, Rick.
Understatement alarm. I was being
very serious here. Josh Gordon or Cleveland now is expecting him out for basically half the year. And, yeah, you may want to stash him on your bench, but I'll tell you what, from a real perspective, a real game perspective, I think that just puts Cleveland in all kinds of turmoil.
You know, it's an unfortunate situation. It was what it really is, because, I mean, just from a football fan standpoint, I mean, what a treat it was watching this guy on the field last year, much less from a fantasy perspective. I mean, he was just dominant. I mean, just dominant. I mean, I've been watching football for maybe not as long as you guys, but pretty long. And I can tell you, it's one of the most memorable stretches I can remember any receiver having, and statistically, obviously, it speaks to it. In terms of what you're talking about, impact in the rest of the team, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of circuses rolling around Cleveland, distractions. I mean, the NFL Network has become like, Browns TV over here, which is unfortunate, but with Johnny Manziel rolling his 20s and, Josh Gordon doing this, and then just the total carousel that has become the front office, and nothing against Mike Pettine. I'm sure he's a fine coach, but, I mean, what was he, their fourth choice as a replacement on this latest buffoonery? I mean, to me, the whole organization, it's really become a joke. And I was on your guys' podcast, I remember specifically, and across other airwaves as well, last season telling you why I – argued this was a 500 team. They were going to finish better than the Steelers. They did all this. And then they go and they trade Trent Richardson, which, of course, it actually is looking like a smart pick right now.
Right.
I do like what they did in the draft. I mean, I always sort of give them, the benefit of the doubt here. I'm not buying into the Miles Austin hype, I'll tell you that. I'm not looking at this guy as one that I mean, maybe he helps the Browns, but I think there's more fantasy upside on taking a late stab with maybe Andrew Hawkins. I like to see, what happens in that backfield particularly. But, Josh Gordon, my rule of thumb is if he's suspended 2 games, he's a second-round pick. If it's 4 games, a fourth-round pick. If it's 6 games, a sixth-round pick. 8 games, I'd probably still spend an eighth-round pick. I mean, look what he did in just 4 games last year. If you had him, he won me a lot of money in daily, I'll tell you that. So Josh Gordon, I mean, the situation – it's one of those things. I'm just so glad that most of the drafts that are my big money drafts and where I'm really investing my time, I mean, these are happening later, closer to the season start. Because if you had a draft, like I'm drafting tonight, I mean, it's 10-team PPR. There's going to be a lot of depth. What point do I consider Josh Gordon, That's going to be interesting. I don't know. And I think if I was in a big money high stakes thing and had early drafts right now, I might roll the dice and take a chance on him in the 6th or 7th round, because if he comes back with a 2-game suspension, you certainly got a bargain. You got a leg up. So it's interesting. But only time will tell. I'm not holding my breath, but the fact it's still going on this long suggests he's going to be on the field at some point in 2014.
Yeah, I agree there. And now, we'll switch before we get to the Manziel, Hoyer, carousel, circus, whatever. You talked about the Miles Austin hype. There's a lot of hype about Ben Tate coming in. And now all of a sudden, Ben Tate's, he's being challenged for the starting job. I think he's going to be the number one back coming out of camp, but he's not been the most durable guy in the past as well. How high are you willing to risk and roll the dice on Ben Tate?
Not very high. I mean, here's a guy in the Texans that was supposed to be this great backup and stuff, but you know, every indication, every time I talked to a Texans beat writer, the story was the same on Ben Tate. None of them thought that he was the answer. I do believe that the Texans clearly didn't really want to bring him back. He got paid in Cleveland because they were desperate, bottom line. Terrence West, he does excite me. I think he's the guy that's going to push for that. And Mike Benton brought in Kyle Shanahan and plus Ravens all offensive line coach Andy Moeller. And between that combo, rest assured, they're going to build a solid running game up there. They use that zone blocking scheme. I think Tate really fits the bill as a guy that, the one-cut type of runner. And he's injury-prone. I mean, that's why, from a fantasy perspective, I mean, there's a lot of things I don't like. But running backs are what I expect to be bad football teams. Definitely take a dip. I'm not saying you can't use them, but then you got a rookie that's got the more upside. You got this injury history here. West and Tate, clearly I would take Tate before West in tonight's draft, but I mean, I just think Tate's a little overvalued at where he's currently being drafted, which is somewhere around round six. I haven't looked at the ADP on him in a while in general because he's just sort of a player that's sort of off my radar. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't touch him anywhere, but chances are based off where he's being drafted, I'm going to look elsewhere.
Yeah, just a lot of question marks there. And look, it's Cleveland. And here's why Cleveland frustrates me. As a lifelong Steeler fan, over these last 15 years of futility has me feeling bad for and rooting for the Browns at times, and I don't like that feeling, and it goes against everything I believe. So moving to a team I don't mind hating, the Baltimore Ravens, I think the biggest questions in terms of fantasy football with the Ravens is that running back position. Ray Rice amazingly walks away with only a two-game suspension. I had a lot of question marks about him coming out of last year just being banged up. Has Ray Rice maintained that starting job? Is he a viable fantasy running back? Does Bernard Pierce make the move? Where are you seeing the Ravens running game shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not getting too excited about it. I mean, the offensive line is still really the issue here, fellas. I mean, Pro Football Focus, who puts a lot more in time depth, is great in these offensive line more than me. You have them rated as a D offensive line, and that was the issue last year, too. The one thing that's going to be different there that I think people need to give it serious due is Gary Kubiak now being the offensive coordinator. And that, they tried that zone blocking running game, never really got it off the ground last year. Now you get Rice in here, and he's going to take the bulk of the carries. I mean, it's just going to take him to week three to get it. I don't think Bernard Pierce is a guy that I think is going to steal the job. Now, granted, he's going to have 2 weeks to showcase himself. They don't have a lot of depth. I mean, they brought in Justin Forsett, I believe, as another potential option there. So I do believe Ray Rice is going to come in. And last year, I was totally off of him, too. But now he's going – you look at the ADP, or my Dream League Football ADP, the last numbers that I pulled up here, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's slipping into with Ray Rice in around six in some cases, you know. So, I mean, at that point of the draft, I think in general he's a guy that I don't mind having Ray Rice as my RB3 if it comes in the seventh round. I mean, 14 games. Now, in terms of his two-game suspension, it's nice to see that the NFL spends guys longer for smoking weed than they do beating up their girlfriends in an elevator. But we'll save that for the other podcast too.
Yeah. The biggest thing I'm concerned with Ray Rice, we've talked about on our show two or three times, he's a small stature guy that runs like Jerome Bettis. And I just fear, especially like with that hip last year, he's
going to
run over people. And I think his body breaks.
Let me ask you this. He's going in, let me ask you guys this, because this is a good question we pondered on one of our shows recently. If you look at where he's going at in the drafts, and there's basically five running backs there in a clump: Toby Gerhardt, Trent Richardson, Ben Tate, Ray Rice, Steven Jackson. Right? These were the five that, I mean, you look at these guys. I mean, which one of those? If you had to pick a running back at that spot, and those were the five names. I mean, I'm not buying into the Toby Gerhardt as being a stud. I'm not saying that. I don't think there's a possibility. Trent Richardson, he scares me just as much as Ray Rice. I mean, Ben Tate, we just talked about. Steven Jackson's already hurt. I mean, I'm just saying that the range he's in, and I think his ADP is in the correct spot right now. You know, this is not Ray. You're not going to get Ray Rice of 2012, but if he falls to you in the seventh round, if you're looking to build depth at running back, I don't think he's going to disappoint.
No, I agree with you there 100%. But we better get moving here. We're a half hour through, and we still have to finish up this division. Let's we'll go to Pittsburgh Steelers, who, you know, there's a lot of mixed emotions out there already. I'm just even between Rick and I, I'm much higher on the Steelers this year than he is. I think they're going to score a lot of points this year.
Well, there's certainly a lot of reasons to have optimism. I'm on the optimistic side. I mean, last year I wasn't. This year I think, obviously, it's a pivotal year. I mean, this is, what, the third season now with Todd Haley, and him and Big Ben seem to be getting along better than what we've seen in the past. They definitely want to speed things up, make it a little more up-tempo this year. I was a bit surprised to see them not even get the mix on Emmanuel Sanders. Yeah, I know that they're high on Marcus Wheaton, and, you know, he certainly has a high ceiling of the group. I will say, you know, between all these Lance Moores and Darius Hayward Bays and all these, I mean, Lance Moore, if you look at his splits, what he did indoors and outdoors in his career, you realize right away why he's going to fail in Pittsburgh and playing in the AFC North. I just don't see it. I think Heath Miller is the guy that got, now a year fully removed from that gruesome knee injury. Coming back into the season, I think he's a guy in for a little uptick in some stats. And I just absolutely love Antonio Brown and the connection he has with Big Ben. I mean, Antonio Brown is the fantasy stud on this team, and certainly delivering. I'm really anxious to see Le'Veon Bell. I think the Steelers are a little more healthy on the offensive line this year. He's got a high, definitely got a little bit higher of a grade. I think Le'Veon Bell, if he stays healthy for 16 games, has a chance to be something real special. And, you know, they still got LeGarrette Blount. We talked to David Todd from 970 ESPN last week on the show on Sirius, and he was real high. He seemed to be real high on this Dree, or however you say it, Archer kid that's coming out, the little speedster out of Kent State, as a player that could surprise. And Martavius Bryant, he's the big guy in the red zone. He thinks he's going to be utilized as a touchdown machine down there potentially. So those are two younger players I'm going to keep my eyes on in the preseason for sure.
Yeah, Brian, a guy, Ben Roethlisberger's been crying for the tall wide receiver ever since Plaxico Burress left the first time. So I think you're going to see them try to fill that role with him. Yeah, Heath Miller, another guy I find interesting. I wonder, I think as much as the splits in the outdoor in terms of, I've seen Lance Moore, you know, get a little bit of run, but I think Heath Miller, those were Heath Miller's catches that Jericho Cautry was getting last year, those 10 touchdowns. And I don't think you're going to see those go to Lance Moore. I do think, you know, you talk about Antonio Brown, and obviously that's a no-brainer pick. I think this guy is probably right now the most undervalued in what's a big crop of top-end wide receivers. His ADP is way too low for me. I think you're talking a top-10 guy easily with what I expect out of this Steelers offense. This is a guy that could be had late in the second round, sometimes even early in the third in a few mocks I've done, and just an amazing value. A guy is really being undervalued in fantasy drafts right now.
Yeah, I mean, Fantistics, our software that, you know, your listeners can check out this stuff for themselves at a free trial at insiderfootball.com. But Anthony Perry, the guys I work for at Fantistics, I mean, the projections are, I mean, uncanny. They got Antonio Brown as the number 8th overall receiver in a PPR setup. But 96 catches, you know, nearly 1,273 yards, 8 touchdowns. And that's where it was last year. 8 touchdowns. He had that monster second half, too. 4 100-yard games. We use quality starts with Fantistics, and what that is how many times was this guy above average than the production of the position? 7 quality starts in his final 8 games. 49 catches, 797 yards, 5 touchdowns. He's not getting it done as much in the red zone as I'd like for a top-10 fantasy wideout, but in PPR formats, he's going to make up for with catches. I think he's going to 166 targets last year, fellas. I don't know, even with what we talked about here, I don't think he's going to get quite that many targets. Maybe 150, but that's 16 less targets. That could result maybe a couple less catches a game, but he's still a guy you can bank on for nearly 8 catches and 100 yards receiving on every week. And if he can score in half the games, absolutely. I agree with you, Rick. This guy's going to be a steal in the late second, early third round of fantasy drafts again.
Yeah, that's for sure. You brought up Dre Archer, you know, a little scat back. You know, they tried that with Chris Rainey, you know, a couple years ago. And, of course,
yeah,
he just got cut again because he doesn't.
Maybe they're looking for the next Willie Parker, man.
Exactly. It's he showed the flashes that it would work really well with these guys like Bell and Blunt. If Archer pans out, I tell you what, this could be a devastating run attack.
You guys got your pulse pretty good on the team. What's your take on Blunt and how he could potentially cut into Le'Veon Bell's time at all? Because that's something that's the thing that's just got me a little hesitant for it, anointing Bell as a lock first rounder, maybe early second rounder.
Yeah, I think initially you're going to go in, you're going to look at a short yardage back. You're going to see the goal line carries. I do wonder, and Le'Veon Bell has no history of having fumble issues, but I know a Mike Tomlin is the first time he coughs one up. That's going to be LeGarrette Blunt's job.
Yeah.
Coughs one up.
Well, it's nice to have that depth. You know, Pittsburgh definitely learned a few years ago that you can go in this division, you can go through running backs pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I see, to be honest with you, especially if they get the lead, I see Le'Veon Bell carrying the load, but then he comes out for a series or two, and they just keep pounding with Blunt, and defenses start wearing down. I mean, that's how I see this train start.
Well, here's the whole thing, my final take on Steelers, really. I'm a fan of the offense. I think it's going to be able to do what it needs to do in fantasy. You know, obviously, we like Bell and Brown. You know, specifically the defense, the rebuilding of the Steelers defense. Last year was definitely a rebuilding year. So how much progression on that side of the ball is going to go a long way to determining where the fantasy production is going to come from Pittsburgh. Because if the defense can, you know, progress as I expect it, I believe you're going to talk about exactly like you're saying, a situation where they're pounding the rock late running the football. But you know, if the defense is more along the lines of what we saw, especially in the early part of last season, during some stretches, I mean, you know, it could be Big Ben having to keep pace, too. So that's going to have a lot to say, I think, in what we see from Pittsburgh this year. But definitely a playoff contender, definitely some fantasy assets, and certainly some upside in the NFL landscape.
All right, so let's move on real quick. I know you got to run here. Let's just take a quick look at the AFC West. I mean, what do you say about the Denver Broncos? I guess the question only for me is Monty Ball, is he even a question mark? Does he do what we saw out of No'Shawn Moreno last year? I know coming off the appendectomy, so we're going to see, have some concern early on in the year. Do you see him, Monty Ball, putting up No'Shawn Moreno-type numbers?
Oh, yeah. I do. And, you know, the best thing that happened, if you're like me and on the side of things where you're a fan of Monty Ball, the best thing that happened was this outbreak here with his appendicitis, that, you know, taking him out of the preseason because it's gonna scare him down to number two pick. But just a couple quick stats. I know you're up against the clock here. But the Broncos you look at what they did last year, and it was the defense that they were going against, too. You realize they ran against dime packages, a league-leading 15% of the time, against nickel defenses 62% of the time, certainly. Only 22% of the time did they face fewer than five defensive backs, which was the lowest in the league. And that's what Peyton Manning does. He brings those units out there. Monty Ball's going to chop that up. And then, you know, possessions. More plays equals more possessions. They led the NFL 72.3 offensive snaps per game, second in pass attempts, but somehow – you know, everybody knows that they pass the ball out, but they still finished 11th in the league in rushing attempts. So add that to the success that they get into the red zone, 4.3 trips to the red zone per game last year. So you start getting into Monty Ball, and his four touchdowns, where'd they come from last year? 4 yards, 1 yard, 8 yards, 5 yards. He's an inside type of guy. And if you look at all running backs in the league with a minimum of 500 yards, he had a first down every 3.2 carries last year. I think Monty Ball running against these pass-friendly defenses, and yeah, to what I think he's going to do with the goal line and the pace. You know, Denver's not going to match last year's numbers. It was a historic year for Peyton Manning. They're still going to be right up there as one of the best offenses in the league. And Monty Ball, I mean, who else are they going to put in there? I mean, Ronnie Hillman?
Exactly.
You know, C.J. Anderson? I mean, Monty Ball is a guy that I'm hoping is my second-round pick in tonight's draft after I go after a stud receiver. With my first pick in this 10-team PPR. If I get Monty Ball, or even if I have to settle for Gio Bernard as my running back on the second round after grabbing a stud receiver in round one in any PPR, I'm going to be real happy. And you can throw Le'Veon Bell into that mix, too, because those are the three guys that are outside the top four running backs that I'm going to have in my second round pick to really make my plan work in PPR leagues, especially where I'm probably going to go after an elite receiver pretty early.
Right. There's no question. And, you know, Peyton Manning's always had decent run, you know, a good fantasy running back. You think about Edgerrin James, of course, Marshall Faulk before that and so forth, a dive for a very short flash. But traditionally, they use the running back. And I see the same thing with Ball. Look, until Hillman can pass protect, they are not going
not
to rip.
Happen.
So, exactly. So I agree 100%.
I love Monty Ball, man. I'm on the Ball bandwagon. Like I said, because he's got this appendix issue, I think it might be just enough for him to slip in round two.
Yeah, yeah, good. And a good value there. Let's jump quickly to Oakland. I guess my only question with the Oakland Raiders, do you care this is the number one between Maurice Jones-Drew and Darren McFadden?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think either of them are going to be a fantasy starter. I do find it surprising the Raiders re-signed McFadden. So that's peculiar. I am interested to see, you know, if McFadden gets hurt, I think, and it's not if, but when, I should say. But yeah. If you know that before the draft, then Jones-Drew gets on my fantasy radar a little bit. But, you know, those guys might have been good if we were drafted back in 2010 here. But I'm turning the page, I think, on both of them. Not to say that I would completely avoid them, but it would have to be like when they were meaningless to, you know, things, which running back four, either of them, yeah, maybe, but not holding my breath.
Yeah, I'm one of these guys. I still have MJD on the radar because, in my mind, McFadden will be out, so it's just a matter of when. And I tell you, there's just not a lot to talk about offensively with Oakland. And Matt Schaub, from what I've seen so far and heard, hasn't looked very good in training camp.
Here's the fantasy relevant thing to take from the Raiders. If you're going to stream defenses, go with whoever's playing the Raiders. Go ahead and draft the Jets defense late in one of your drafts. And you know in week one, when the Raiders come to town, you're going to get a couple, at least one pick six, right? So the fantasy, early in the season, you definitely want to go against the Raiders. Although I will say this, there's one guy on the Raiders that will probably end up in a lot of my teams because the Raiders are going to be behind, and he helped me out last year, so I believe in him in a PPR as a fifth receiver, sixth receiver type. But it's Rod Streeter. Rod Streeter's a guy that I definitely think could have some value, garbage time value.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And we'll move away from Oakland because they're easy to move away from, and we'll go.
The Raiders are trying to do it for crying
That's
out
right.
loud.
To do it
themselves. San Diego. I've been arguing with a lot of people. In fact, I don't know. I think it was CBS or one of them. They've got Phillip Rivers at like 15 or something. I have him 5. I am sticking another year in this offense and the weapons he has. I think Phillip Rivers is back to what we expect from him. And yeah, I'm targeting this guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're waiting on quarterbacks, you can certainly do worse. I'm a little worried about what we saw down the stretch. I mean, they really went to running the football a little bit more, you know, trying to find their identity, and they parlayed that into obviously beating the Bengals, making a little playoff push there. They got a lot of options. I mean, this offense has a lot of options. You know, Frank Reich calling the shots now, and I think with Mike McCoy, I mean, he's going to prefer to run the football. So I don't think Rivers is the guy I want as my QB1. But if I'm going to take two, if I'm going to try to roll the dice with a couple guys outside my top 10, you know, I could parlay him with, you know, another guy, you know, right in that same rankings and, you know, try to play matchups and stuff. I think you're all right. I definitely like Keenan Allen. I think he was the real deal. I don't think, I think a lot of people are sort of writing him off a little bit on how that came out of there. But consistency elsewhere out of that receiving core is just too hard to find. I mean, the tight ends are another story, but I mean, Keenan Allen and the Rivers combination was pretty special at times during the season last year, no doubt.
Yeah, you bring up the tight ends. Can Ladarius Green unseat Antonio Gates, or are we going to see a sort of split down again?
I definitely think this is the year of Green. I mean, talk about a guy with nice value. He's going outside the top 120 in ADPs right now. Tight end, one of those positions, I think there's a lot of reason to sit around and wait on those, too. And, I mean, clearly you can make a case to go early and get one of the studs. But if I miss out on that first Jimmy Graham, you know, Rob Gronkowski, Julius Thomas tight end, which more chances than not, I will. Latarius Green, certainly a guy to come around 8, 9, 10, at his 9th, 10th, 12th tight end off the board there. If he's still sitting there, I'll take my chances. I think he definitely has a high ceiling, and that's what I look for in those types of players.
Yeah, and the backfield in San Diego, kind of reminiscent of Detroit. You have Reggie Bush and Joyke Bell. They've got the Ryan Matthews and Danny Woodhead. And I tell you what, they combined for 2,700 total yards last year, and they're pretty dynamic coming out of there.
Ryan Matthews showed us what he can do when he plays the full schedule. There's no doubt about it. Am I ready to jump on board? I mean, he's an RB2. He's an RB2. I think he comes with risk, and that's why he falls to where he does in the draft. I haven't ended up with him in very many mocks, but on the other hand, Danny Woodhead, the guy that I'm regularly running into in mock drafts in about round 10 or 11, because if you get him as your RB4 or, you know, even 3 if you're deep elsewhere in a PPR, I mean, the guy's going to give you a consistent 10 points a week. I'm really interested to see why they, you know, what Donald Brown is all about. I think he's just insurance and anticipating Matthew's injury. Michael Gelkin from the Union Tribune, when we talked to him there a couple weeks back, said that, you know, he didn't anticipate any more than 5 to 6 carries for Brown in a normal week. So he's not really on fantasy radar. But I think if you grab Matthews in rounds maybe 4 or 5, it's about right. Woodhead's a guy that, you know, like I said, mid-round nice little pluck there in PPR as a reserve player.
Yeah, if I can grab 60 or 70 receptions in the 10th or 11th round, I'll take that all the time. So let's wrap it up with the Kansas City Chiefs. Will there be anybody not named Jamaal Charles from the Kansas City Chiefs on your fantasy roster this season?
Well, Dwayne Bowe is one of the guys that's on my do not touch list. I am so done with Dwayne Bowe. I can't believe there's still people out there in the industry touting this guy as a, you know, nice value pick right now, but I'm not buying it. But yeah, there is one player that Miles Davis, I think, is a great player. I mean, obviously, if you're a Charles owner and you're in a league where you can afford to handcuff players with a number of roster spots, it's a no-brainer. But I play in a lot of 16-team leagues. I'll be in the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship, pretty big high-stakes regional event we do here at the Horseshoe Casino. And, you know, I'll be in the one we do one in Cincinnati, one in Louisville the next couple of weeks. And, you know, it's a high-stakes league. There's 20-round drafts. Niall Davis is a guy that I will definitely be looking at in these types of leagues, or if you're in the NFFC where you have these deeper rosters, because, one, I think he's going to have enough role to have an asset as an RB5 or 6 all by himself. But, I mean, not saying Charles is injury-prone. He has a freak injury, obviously, that cost him the season there. But, I mean, don't kid yourself. I mean, that's what you look for, guys that if their starter goes down could suddenly emerge. And Mount Davis, there's only one running back out there, I think, is a better spot for that, and that's Christian Michael there of the Seahawks, who is another one of these guys that is one injury away from being a first-round potential player. I think Miles Davis is the real deal, and a guy that I would stash late even if I don't invest in Jamaal Charles or have the opportunity to invest in Jamaal Charles.
Yeah, any kind of trepidation, I mean, they lost 3 starters from the offensive line, free agency, and, you know, of course, they seem to piece it together, but, you know, it's not the same chemistry. Of course, we still have camp and everything. Do you have any... You have any hesitation? You bump Charles down a tick or two because of this, just because they don't really have many other weapons? You know, I mean, obviously he's still a top 3 back, but you know where I'm.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line, I mean, going back to, you know, I mean, in general, the offensive line, it wasn't graded well last year. I mean, it's one of these B grades. But the thing about Andy Reid and his offensive line coach, Andy Heck, they use that, you know, hybrid blocking scheme. It mixes a lot of zone, gap blocking up front. So I think from a run perspective, that fits real well in the Charles schemes. And, you know, it basically, you know, gets the best use out of what they're getting the most out of their offensive line doing. So I think it's a good mesh. I'm not as concerned. I will say this. I mean, rest assured, LeSean McCoy is confidently my number one pick in any format, in any rankings. not to say Charles isn't right there behind him, but if I'm picking number one, I'm still going with the Eagles running back myself. But in PPR leagues, Charles, I mean, he is all they've got. And, you know, he's proven himself, so I don't hesitate to make him a top three pick anywhere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have him at two right behind McCoy myself. Dan, we certainly appreciate you. We got, you know, about 7-8 minutes to go. We'll let you get ready for your draft.
Get ready for my draft, fellas. It's always great to talk some football with you. Certainly look forward to doing so during the season. You guys do a great job, and just happy to communicate, you know, talk with you on Twitter or whatever anytime, some football stuff, man. Check out my site, GetSportsInfo.com. Dan Claskins on Twitter. Definitely catch us on SiriusXM. I'm on Saturdays and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. all preseason. And then we got our Fox Sports 1360 show starting this week, too. So a lot of good stuff going on, man. And just glad it's football again.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, Dan, we appreciate you taking the time. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, fellas. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
All right, Dan Claskins. Check out his show on Sirius if you're in the Cincinnati area. I had the opportunity, Rick, to be on that show a couple of times. Love what Dan does. Great, great show. It's that time of year, Rick. A lot of insight. You know what I like about Dan? One thing I don't think we talk about enough and you don't hear mentioned enough, when you're talking about the success, potential success of individual players, he's bringing up coaching staffs, offensive coordinators, offensive line coaches, looking at that. If you're really doing your homework, everybody out there, you need to dig into that a little bit more, I think. I think that's something that we tend to forget as a fantasy. You could have Adrian Peterson. If he's not in the right system, he may not be the Adrian Peterson we know. Now, he may be the exception, but you get the point. And if you're iffy on a guy, it's something you have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I think we'll just start making a point to start bringing that up. We talk amongst ourselves, you know, off the air a lot about the different coordinators and systems and so forth, and I guess that's a good point. We are remiss at bringing a lot of this up, you know, and especially to, you know, newer people into the fantasy game might just go right over the head, not even think about stuff like that. And so that's why we're here. We're going to keep on telling more information to these people.
I thought you were going to say keep on keeping on. No. That's what I was rooting for you to say.
No.
So let's take a look at what we got, Rick, about 3 or 4 minutes left. I did want to we seem to be spending a lot of time on the Browns with Dan. This Josh Gordon suspension, potential suspension, explain to me, Rick, how. Yeah, it looks like now reports coming out. It's not official. We're not going to know for about another week, they said, what the official. But their Browns are planning on 8 games. How do you have your second drug offense, which carries with it a 1-year suspension, while you're appealing it, you get pulled over? Was it a DUI, Rick, I believe? How does that translate into then an 8-game suspension? Can you explain that to me? Because I absolutely don't understand it.
I can't understand what is taking so long with all this nonsense. It's appalling. I have no clue. And how did Ray Rice get 2 games?
Any of these players are just running around lawless.
That's exactly. They're running around lawless. But you know what's lawless is the commissioner himself.
Right.
It's inconsistency personified. 2 games for cold cocking a fiance and dragging her out of an elevator.
I watched him drag her unconscious out of the elevator.
Yeah,
Rick.
I know. And 8 games for this and 3 games for that and a season for this. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just all over the place.
Let's not forget, Ben Roethlisberger, while it was reduced to 4, was initially suspended 6 games on an allegation.
Right.
Now, was his halo around him? No. Look, something happened there. There's no doubt about it. But Josh Gordon, I mean, they have a drug policy in place. This second failed test is 1 year. So I think that's your starting point. You decide what the DUI had to do with anything. I mean, he tried the awesome excuse of it was secondhand smoke. It was a contact buzz. Him and Bill Clinton could hang out with these allegations. But you put it together, you mix in the DUI. I don't know why there's a discussion. It's a matter of is it more than 1 year should be the only question. Now, back to the fantasy football, the cold-hearted business that it is, if he's only suspended for 8 games, Rick, I think 7th, 8th, 9th round, I'm taking a flyer on this guy. You go, here's a guy I want for a playoff push.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. Just strictly from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, I want this guy on my team if I can get him at the right price, especially towards the end of the year. Like you say, you start making the playoff push and get into the playoffs and run to the Super Bowl. You want him on your team. That being said, getting back to the point at hand, it's utterly ridiculous.
Right.
They don't even need to be talking about this. It should be – everything should be behind closed doors. It should take – a week at the most to come out with these decisions.
Right.
It's ludicrous.
And
this isn't really a court of law.
No.
It's the NFL. Yeah, I mean, making their own decisions.
Yeah, and eventually Goodell's going to do whatever he wants anyhow. There can't be that much to consider in this. There's obviously sides of this we don't see and we don't know. But it's gone from the ridiculous to the sublime at this point. So we'll keep an eye on that. Hopefully, when we hit the air next week, we'll have a final decision, and we'll certainly look at the fantasy impacts of that decision. So, Rick, we're about out of time. Just to reiterate what we talked about off the top of the show, we have a lot of audio from the enshrinement ceremony, audio from Media Day, a lot of which can already be found on the site at AsylumFantasySports.com. We recorded a partial episode on Radio Row there in the Hall of Fame, and we're going to add in the audio we have. We got audio from Steve Large, and we got audio from all 7 Hall of Famers. We got audio from Harry Carson. We got post-game audio from the Hall of Fame game, which you can hear on the Fantasy Sports Network show on Sunday. And like I said, after it airs there, I'll get that up on our website. So keep following us, AsylumFantasySports.com, and you'll get a full backstage pass, Rick, to what was the weekend in Canton.
Yeah, and we want to get it out as soon as we can, so obviously things keep rolling and progressing, and we don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but it was a great weekend. A lot of good interviews, a lot of good audio, like you said, and we have some videos of some interviews. The audio quality is not as good. Obviously, we have some improvements before next year. But, hey, for a rookie campaign, we walked away calling it a win.
That's right. Patting ourselves on the back because none of you will do it. So we're certainly willing to do that. So, Rick, let's wrap it up here. Thanks again to everyone for listening. Check us out on Twitter at Asylum Football. What is it? AsylumFootball@gmail.com. Get those lineup questions. It's that time. Keepers, lineups.
Yeah, I answered a couple during the show, and I didn't want to take away. You were talking. It wasn't like I took myself away. So
we are a full service fantasy football show.
We'll get caught up. We're back from the assignment weekend. Call it that.
Assignment weekend. So that's it for now. AsylumFantasySports.com, FantasySportsNetwork.com on Sunday, Cablevision Channel 147 in the New York area. We will be back on these airwaves live next Wednesday, 7 o'clock Eastern. Until then, we'll see you.
Take care.